Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Good morning, everyone. It's a rainy morning in Johannesburg, and I have the pleasure this morning of chatting with Ubusisekile Khumalo, the author of the Harvard Wife series and lots more other books. But today, our conversation is going to be about rubies and rain. And I am Sue Nyati, and you probably have read my books as well. Today is not about me, it's about Ubusi and rubies and rain. And yeah, so before I launch into the conversation, I just want to introduce Ubusi. Ubusi has a catalogue of fiction. I like to call her a serial writer and a serial thriller, because I think that is what best describes her work. And she has plenty of books. She's written plenty of books, and I always wonder how she does it. So amongst her titles are Fallen Candle, Noma Swazi, her Silent Scream series, and the Sunshine and Shadow series. And today we are going to focus on that series, and we're going to look at the second book. I think it's your 9th book, Busi, am I correct?
10th.
10th, wow. Yeah, so let me just hand over to Busi and just ask you to introduce yourself. I always think the author always does a better job of introducing themselves.
I think you did a wonderful job because I always struggle. My name is Ubusisekile Khumalo. As Sue said, I like writing. Apparently, I have a lot to say. I had a lot to say when I was a kid, and I still have a lot to say now. Rubies and Rain is my 10th book. And I studied law at the University of Zimbabwe, which features in a lot in Sunshine and Shadows, the series. But I'm a full-time author, a mother, humanitarian, and a social media enthusiast.
I can definitely attest to that. I've seen your videos on TikTok, and yeah, and you've got quite a huge following on Facebook. So yeah, I think you're more than just a social media enthusiast. So Busi, before we jump into the book Rubies and Rain, I just want you to talk about your writing process. I mean, how are you able to churn out all these books? It seems like you drop a book every year.
I'm actually about to drop the 11th this year. But I think I have insomnia. I suffer from insomnia, so I don't sleep. I call it my witching hour, from any time from 12 to 6 a.m. while everyone else is sleeping. My mind is just running amok, and I'm there on my phone writing. And that's how I've managed to write so many books, because I started publishing The Harvard Wife in 2017, and now we're in 2025. So yeah, 10 books from then to there. It's a lot. I also do have a blog on Facebook, and I think the readers, they are always like, what happens next? What happens next? So I now have sort of I used to write almost every day, although I'm trying out sleeping more. So I've reduced the number of pages that I write, which is bad for the readers, but good for my mental health and my health in general. So yeah, that's my writing process. Mostly when my mind is a bit all over the place, writing calms me down.
Oh, that's excellent. So you're basically an owl or a morning owl.
Yes.
And you use the mornings. I think I used to write in the mornings, because I used to find it also quite peaceful and no disturbance. But I think as I get older, yeah, sleep has gotten the better of me. You sleep better, I think, with age. We'll see. So you can look forward to that.
I can look forward to that.
So in Rubies and Rain, we first actually meet, you know, your vivacious character, Vimbai, in the prequel, in Sunshine and Shadows. I don't know if people need to read it, Sunshine and Shadows, or can they just jump into Rubies and Rain? Or would you recommend they do?
I'll just recommend they read Sunshine and Shadows first, because I have been interacting with some of the readers, and someone was like, I didn't know it was a series. So she started with Rubies and Rain, and she got a bit confused, because at times we do reference things that happen in Sunshine and Shadows. So for the best, I'd say read Sunshine and Shadows first and then read Rubies and Rain. They can be read as standalone, But for the best experience, I'd say read Sunshine first so that it flows, because Rubies and Rain starts immediately where Sunshine and Shadows ends. So, yeah.
No, that's so true. And, you know, like I said, Wusi is a serial thriller. So you really have to watch season one. And season one, unfortunately, is Sunshine and Shadows. So in season one and Sunshine and Shadows, we meet the vivacious Vimbai, who's a lawyer by profession. And I think, Wusi, you alluded to the fact that you also studied law. So is the character Vimbai modeled on your own character? Well, your person? Well, I wouldn't say personality, but like your own experiences in terms of studying law at UZ.
She's actually modeled on my friend Vimbai, who I studied with at the University of Zimbabwe. So Vimbai, we started together, and then she dared me to write a book that was, you know, the sexiest, you know, most thrilling book. And I was like, only if you allow me to make you the main character. She was like, okay. So I sort of mirrored a bit of Vimbai, how she is. Vimbai is very loving. She loves people. She's always out there. But the funniest thing happened, I think I wrote the book, and when I was done, and after she read it, she was like, Wusi, there are some things you wrote here which are about my life, but I never told you about. I was like, huh? She was like, yeah, there are some things that you... I was like, oh. She was like, you know, when you wrote Talk About Shadow, I did date an older guy at some point. I was like, oh. You never told me. So it was very funny to sort of have that conversation where I wasn't really mirroring her life, but in the end I did, sort of. So yeah, it wasn't about me. It's about Vimbai. And of course, I do put in some of my experiences from the university life, you know, the way I would see men poach on those young girls, you know, the cars stopping there. We're called fresh meat. When you're in part one, you're called fresh meat.
Yeah, I know. The predatory culture is still very prevalent, whether it's, you know, in UZ or at UJ, you know, you see it all, you know, everywhere. And it's interesting to me because in Sunshine and Shadows, we are in Harare, which is called the Sunshine City, incidentally, as well. And then in the sequel, you move us through several cities, from African cities and to European cities, and we even end up in Australia. So why do we see the shift in location with this Rubies and Rain?
I think because in Rubies and Rain, their lifestyle sort of has caught up with them. And now they are fugitives of the law, fugitives running away from a system that used to benefit them. And it really does mirror a lot of Zimbabweans, because a lot of us, we start in Zimbabwe, and then when it gets too much, we run, which is not necessarily a good thing, but I think it's out of necessity. It's a survival. Sort of, yeah.
Kind of survival of the fittest. But you also need to also have the means, you know.
Yes.
And the access. I mean, I also find that, you know, through this movement as well, we have a more racier plot in the second book. You know, it's almost like, it kind of reminds me of Sidney Sheldon's novels, you know, where you have location unknown, you know, and you're like literally speeding through different cities. And that really, I think, for readers, you know, encapsulates in what the pace of this book is. It's fast paced and it's quite racy. And like you allude to, you know, privilege permeates this book, you know, whether it's pretty privilege or political privilege. Why was it important for you to highlight this in Rubies and Rain?
I think because there's a lot of narrative about Zimbabwe that is out there about our struggles, you know, because a lot of times when people write, they write about the everyday person, the poor people. But in that poverty, there are other people who are benefiting from that poverty. And those are those who are, you know, politically inclined. We see them living those lives, you know, we see them going to Mauritius just for tea or just for breakfast. They have these lives that we really are not privy to. So when I show, when I set out to show people Zimbabwe, I wanted them to see everything. I wanted them to see the sunshine, the shadows, the rubies in the mud and the rain, everything. Just.
And I like that the book opens with this, you know, sort of quote that says, "Rain didn't make things messy. People did that all on their own," by Barbara Dilinsky. What were you alluding to? Well, without giving too much away of the plot.
I think I was giving away to the fact that in as much as Ruby finds herself in this situation, you know, where she's now in a prison cell, where she doesn't have a partner or whatever, a lot of what she's going through, she actually did it to herself. Even though she didn't know what her father did, she had no problem enjoying the privilege that came with being the father of a kingmaker. You know, she enjoyed the best schools. She enjoyed all this money, all this wealth, all this privilege, all those connections. And what happens when those connections that you've made, or when it becomes messy, you know, we blame the situation, but when you look at it, you have to stop and see what, you know, I'm part of this mess.
So I noticed that in your book, you know, the women in your book have a lot of sexual agency. Like we see when Nosihle and the mountain and, you know, Vimbai as well. I mean, especially we see it a lot with Vimbai in the prequel in Sunshine and Shadows. And I want to talk about that more. I mean, but in this book, we see women, you know, having little political agency. So they have a lot of sexual agency, but very little political agency, and are used as pawns in settling scores. Was that intentional?
I think it wasn't intentional. But when I wrote this book, I think it was following around the time when those three ministers, opposition ministers, I won't name them, were abducted. And then after that, they claimed being abducted and they were sexually, you know, abused and everything for, you know, protesting or whatever. And then the state later arrested them for false claims. And I think one of them ended up actually going through a mental breakdown. And so when I was writing the book, that was happening. And it sort of did influence the story a bit because I did mention or mirror it a bit, but also the fact that I see a lot of women, especially those of the big men in, you know, in Zimbabwe,
the chefs,
yes, the chefs, you know, when the chef is going down, usually it's the woman who suffers, or, you know, the public humiliation that some of these women go through, and people just look away. Like even on Twitter, when you see the rhetoric, when people are talking about it, it's as if they're pawns, as if they're just, you know, the agency is not there. And in as much as I'll gave those women the agency, especially Vimbai, the agency to be bold in her body, to, you know, take what she wants, but then there are some things which are still done to her, you know. Even though she has this agency, she can only do so much. And yeah.
Yeah, she has little control, yes, basically, of the bigger, you know, well, circumstances, or, you know, that, you know, surround her.
Yeah.
And I think we have seen a lot of it play out in Zimbabwe. I think you see a lot of the times where women, you know, women, as long as, you know, they're close to power.
Yes.
You know, your proximity to power determines your position.
Yes.
But immediately when you're removed, you know, from that proximity, you know, your circumstances can change, you know.
Yes. And then you are ridiculed for it. You are, you know, you are shamed for it. And it's really sad.
Yeah. And I like how you portrayed that in the book, and you really show it explicitly how that really happens, and the fates, how your fate can actually change overnight. And, you know, in the opening of Rubies and Rain, we are quickly thrust into the prisons of Harare. And like you pointed out that, you know, you were influenced by the politics of the time and what was happening with the abductions. And so we have this, you know, the plot, you know, opening and playing out largely in Harare Central Prison, which kind of reminded me of Petina Gapa's book. I don't know if you ever read it, The Book of Memory, which also takes place in Chikurubi Prison. So why was it important for you to spotlight the life in prisons, in Zimbabwean prisons?
Because I remember when I was studying humanitarian law, which was third year or fourth year, yeah. But basically, our lecturer then, Mr. Chimga, I failed to say his name, but it's Zimbabwe, yeah. Chimga, but yes, he was talking about the conditions in prison. And we had also Professor Maduku, who would always, you know, tell us the stories of his time when he was arrested. And it really, you know, it stayed with me, the fact that I wondered what was happening during COVID, you know, to those women, because those prisons are known for being unsanitary. So I'm wondering what happens as a woman there, because you need, you know, sanitary pads, you need sanitary towels. What are the conditions like? And so I was highlighting, because it's also a part of a human rights infringement, you know, and people are just turning a blind eye. I think we've normalized it to a point, and it's not right. And I remember we had this conversation before with Sunshine and Shadows, where I was like, no, I didn't set out to be an activist in these books, but somehow it just came out. So I think, yes.
And it's also quite interesting that prison conditions for Black women haven't changed. I mean, I'm doing some research on a book, and a woman is incarcerated in Rhodesia, a Black woman, together with her daughter. And this is nonfiction. So, and she's, you know, recounting the prison, you know, prison conditions. This is like in the 1960s, and it's the same things, filthy, you know, no food. And she's in prison with her daughter, and she's breastfeeding, and there's no water for her to even wash. So it's actually quite interesting how, you know, things haven't changed over the years. And other women actually then, you know, white women incidentally actually rallied for her release, you know, because they were saying she's, you know, how can you keep women in such conditions? So it's actually quite an interesting reflection that life in prisons still, you know, hasn't really changed.
It hasn't.
And so, you know, it leads me to my next question in terms of, you know, this book. I mean, unlike your other books, we'll see, in this book, you have really moved a lot to Zimbabwe, and you give a lot of social commentary and political commentary. Why now? You know, like, why? You know, I mean, I think in all your other books, you've kind of shied away from Zimbabwe.
Yes. I think I was so afraid, you know, because I grew up in fear. I was a very vocal child growing up, and my mother was a strict Ndebele woman. You know, she'll be like, "Uzanyamalala, you'll disappear." Because when we were growing up, people were disappearing, and unfortunately, they are still disappearing, you know. And so also being, I think, in South Africa and seeing people stand up and seeing people talk about what is happening sort of made me stop and reflect and say, you know what, I can't be reflecting about everything that is happening all over Africa and shy away. You know, I have to face those demons. I have to really say it, because tomorrow my daughter is going to grow up, and I want her to know exactly, even if we never stay there full time, you know, it's still home. And if I don't say it, who will?
And it's true. So there's a time, I think, in everyone's life where, you know, you have to speak truth to power, I suppose, and as they call it. And I think your fear is not unwarranted, but because we've seen it. I mean, even now, the editor of a certain newspaper has you know, been she was in prison, I think, but she's out on bail for writing a piece. Even it was a satirical piece. So, you know, there is a certain level of, you know, like, you, we don't, you know, as a writer, there's a real threat of writing, you know, what you feel and speaking truth to power. And so it also takes courage. But like you're saying, at some point, you cannot just sit, be oblivious and sit and ignore it. I mean, you are called a romance writer, you know, a romance novelist. But I feel like, I don't know, in this, with especially with this book, I feel like as if this book is more than just a romance novel. The stakes are higher. We have a racier plot. There's espionage, murder, and political intrigue. It's action-packed. And I would prefer to call it a political thriller, you know? I mean, do you think you've been boxed in as in the romance genre?
I think people can't really find the right box to put me in, so they...
Maybe there's no box.
Yes. I feel like because there's sex, then sex does not equate romance. I think that's one thing that people don't understand, because there's really no happy ending in my books, most of them. I think the only solid romance that I've written is Noma Swazi. Otherwise, the others are more drama. And as you say, this one was more of a political thriller. But also, I want to portray those things in a way that I want my people to read and enjoy, in a language that will, you know, and what do people enjoy? Love, you know, and love is there in war. Love is there in, you know, so I understand why they would say it's romance, but it's really not. And I think I don't have a box and I don't want to be put in a box.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And maybe this could be your way of spreading yourself, you know, beyond just being the romance novelist. Although I would have to say that your books are very sexy. I mean, let's not run away from that.
Yes, they are.
And you've earned your reputation as a queen of steamy sex scenes. And I always wonder, Busi, I mean, how do you maintain that momentum of having a lot of sex scenes but keeping it fresh, new every time in every book?
I think I write what I would like to read, you know, and I love romance. I love smut. I love dark romance. But the thing that excites me most about a book is that the sex has to be placed just right, you know, not just putting it in just to feel, you know, a spot or whatever. It has to be a build up, you know, I can feel the tension, I can feel. And so that's how I write as well. And I don't just put sex scenes just randomly. If you notice, there are times when, especially with Nosiche, she had more sexy time this time around because Ruby and Vimbai were going through it. So when it was now too much for those, I was like, okay, let me give people a rest. Okay, let's go to Nosiche. Oh, and then when you're just relaxing, boom, we're back there. And it's like, huh. Okay, so it's sort of, at times, yes, I use it to just give people relief. But also, I think because it always shocks me how people want to shy away from sex, especially Africans, considering that our population is, it's obvious people are having sex. So why aren't we free to write about it? And so I think I enjoy sex and I'm not afraid to write it, but I can't really say I am a smart writer, or I think there should be a balance somewhere.
Yeah. No, I think I like your technique when you say, especially with this book, you bring it in to give relief to the readers, which I think is a great technique and a way of looking at it, you know, like, and yeah, and that you are very intentional in how you place your scenes. It's actually even more interesting for me in this book that, you know, there's a shift from your heterosexual to the bisexual. So what kind of inspired that transition in sexuality?
Because we can't talk about human rights violations in Zimbabwe without talking about or acknowledging the hate that homosexuality gets. And it's something that really was very outspoken by our former president. I'm not sure about the current one, where he stands, but I think it really hasn't been a shift there. And I have friends whom I know, but they don't really leave it out loud. I remember the one friend actually told me, you know, he was so shy about it. But I'd known for so long because I knew him and I knew what he was. But when he came out, you know, and now when other people ask me, I have to lie about it to protect him, you know. And I feel like that's a shitty way to live. And so when we look at Zimbabwe, we have to look at it in its whole. Yes, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful country. It has so many resources. It has such potential. But it is a tyranny and it affects people, you know. And when we're looking at the vulnerable, it's not just women, it's not just children, it's the homosexuals. It's, you know, there are certain parts. And so I was bringing that in. And also, I feel like when people look at sexuality, or we can't say you have agency, yet you can't choose who you want to be with.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think as a society, Zimbabweans are very homophobic.
Yes.
And there's a lot of misogyny. And I see that played out a lot in social media. And I think you tried to capture a lot of that hate.
Yes.
You know, I think you captured it well as well in just getting the, you know, the strands. And I don't know, what do you think could help us, you know, in becoming more tolerant? I mean, we have this mantle as a Christian nation.
Mm.
Yet there's this, you know, lack of tolerance.
Yes. And I feel like it's very ironic because Christianity is supposed to be founded on love, you know, the love that God had for all his children, you know. And when we nitpick, when we choose and pick to say, no, he will only love you if you do this because it makes you comfortable, you know. We don't talk about those pastors who are sleeping with 7-year-olds. You know, we don't talk about it. If we're saying we are so intolerant as a Christian, why are we allowing those grown men to marry 13-year-olds, you know? And so it's now a matter of, I don't really know what can help, but I can maybe, if I speak it and someone reads it and feel maybe braver to actually say, okay, this is who I am, or this is, and we do find some people actually go out of Zimbabwe so that they can truly live who they are. You know, we have Abondo Isile, you know, there's influencers, and I, would he have been as free being like that when he was back home, you know? And I don't really think there's a solution. I don't know if there's a solution, but I think turning a blind eye is not helping.
So what kind of emotional response are you hoping to elicit with this new book?
I think of course, there are some very heavy, heavy themes in the book and some triggers as well. But I hope for empathy and understanding. You know, when a lot of people say, why don't Zimbabweans go back? Why aren't they fighting? Why aren't they, you know, I hope when they read this book, they understand, you know, like, yes, we are afraid, but our fear is not unfounded. You know, it's not because they're like, no, but for people have to die, but people have been dying. Mm-hmm. They have been dying, and it hasn't changed, you know. And so it's a matter of, do you want to be a hero or do you want to be alive? Do you want to see, do you want your children to have a father and a mother, you know? And to also see that the situation is the way it is because people are benefiting from what is happening, you know? And until we, and I don't think it's a matter of just changing one president for the next. It's a matter of a whole systematic change, you know. And I think I'll delve that mostly into book three, you know.
Oh, so there's a book three coming up.
If I start writing, I haven't started writing it. I have to, but so.
Because you hint at it. I mean, you love these cliffhanger endings. And I think with Joshua, the ending alludes to, you know, something.
Yes.
And a new installment.
So I was supposed to be writing it, but then because it sort of colludes with the other world. So it colludes with the Daniel from The Harvard Wife. Mm-hmm. So that's why I had to bring out his baby maker, which is the 11th book that I'm working on now before the third installment of this one, because we actually see Joshua in his baby maker. And Chef in his baby maker. So it's, you know, the build up to the third book, and also the, you know, the revolution. Oh, yes. So it's.
So we'll see. So you'd advise readers to also read the Harvard series, I guess, because I mean, there's this like intertwining of these series. And
they do. So I think for you to enjoy the Busisekile Khumalo, so it's now a thing. It's now the Busisekile Khumalo universe because I've built this world where these characters keep combining and meeting, and it's not just isolated. It's now intentional. So I would say read The Harvard Wife and you will love. I enjoyed it when I was writing it. I was like, oh! This is so cool. And I was telling my brother, I was like so excited to say, oh, they are making so much magic together. And I would never have thought that Joshua would have something in common with Daniel, you know. But also when we look at the coup, that was not the coup, you know. It was rumored that they had help from a South African minister, you know. And so I was like, oh, I have a South African minister. So, yeah.
And so this it's coming together nicely, and it's actually quite nice because I don't think you planned it that way.
No.
But it's, you know, as the world of writing, things, you know, plots entangle.
Yes.
And it becomes more plotty and more racier.
Entanglement.
No, thank you so much, Wusi, for this, you know, intriguing insight into your world of writing. And, you know, as we close, I just want to know who's your, you know, your perfect reader?
Perfect reader.
Who do you want to pick up your books when you write? Who do you imagine reading? Who's that audience for your books?
African women.
African women.
And I know that men also read it, but most importantly, African women, because I feel like once you have a reading, you know, women are readers, then it means their children will be readers too. Then it means tomorrow is safe, you know, because I love African women so, so much. And these are just my love letters to them, basically, you know. I think the one thing that clinched writing as a career for me, because when I wrote The Harvard Wife, I was just hoping it will softly lead me towards law, you know. But when I wrote Nomaswazi and I had these women coming to me and be like, how did you know? You know, I used to cut myself and no one actually describes it the way that you do. It's like you see me. It's like you were there. And so for me, it clinched that, you know what? I want African women to feel seen. I want them to pick up my book and see themselves, you know, see their faces, see their struggles, see their triumphs, and see, you know, their pain, everything. I want them to see themselves. So my perfect reader is an African woman. And it doesn't matter whether you're black, white, Indian, you're young, you're old.
Age restriction.
Although I started reading at a very young age, books that I shouldn't have been reading. But maybe young, let's say 16. Okay, yeah. From young 16 to, yeah. But really, every African woman, one story at a time.
Okay, thank you so much, Busi. I think you're a gift to the African woman, and may she pick up your books and find so much pleasure. And not just pleasure, but also you educate and empower women through your books, even in issues of mental health, you know, sexual repression, oppression. And you go where a lot of writers don't go. And so we thank you for your time. We also thank you, PageCast, for this feature. Thank you, Quella Books, for publishing Busi. And we thank you all for listening to us.
And thank you, Sue, for this. You know, I was enjoying the question so much. I didn't want it to end. I just like, oh, this question. So thank you, Sue.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but please do pick up a copy of Rubies and Rain. But before you do, you might want to read Sunshine and Shadows. It's an amazing book. I loved it. Busi never disappoints. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.